your openness to the world starts to just expand dramatically. So it starts to allow you to start to see other problems. And then you start to combat all these things that you want to fix. And then you forgot that you're running one business and you're like, wait a second, I got to pull the brakes on here and go back to what I was building. But that's what creativity comes from. And it comes from being in this open world of being able to solve one problem that you started with and then being able to understand how you're able to solve it and how that can open up leagues and leagues of more opportunities. And as you continue to grow as an entrepreneur, you'll get brought in more ideas, more concepts, more problems.
Life is an endless stream of challenges, but no worries. Manoj is bringing the world's best minds right here for you.
My gosh, Manoj, you just blew my mind.
Thank you, universe. Manoj, thank you.
I'm so grateful.
It makes me feel a little bit better.
Thank you.
Bootstrapping Your Dreams is here to give you what you need to succeed.
Hello and welcome to this new episode of Bootstrapping Your Dreams show. I'm your host, Manoj Agarwal. And today we have a very special guest, Jeffrey Portman. So Jeffrey is an early stage venture capitalist and he invests in startups. Jeffrey, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, and the kind of exciting things that you do in the startup ecosystem?
Well, thank you very much for having me today. And it's fascinating because I think in the world that we both operate in and being able to work in as an angel VC and being able to invest in early stage companies, every day is exciting. Yeah. I can tell you that you wear many hats, but you get to see so many amazing companies, get to work with so many, so much cool technology, innovation, and that's across the board. It doesn't matter what spectrum, it doesn't matter if it's CPG, fintech, it's all amazing and it's really incredible. And I can say that, having this role and being able to create this role from nothing to me is probably the most exciting thing I've got to do in a day or in a year or in the last 10 years. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think you touch upon a very key point here. Like people who are innovators and sort of are entrepreneurial, I think money sometimes becomes secondary than just innovating and learning more stuff and getting curious about what else is possible. Is that what you are referring to here as well?
Oh, big time. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, as an entrepreneur, one thing that we always go through is that, you start to work on something and once you dive into it, you don't realize it, but your focus starts to go into this one business. And then all of a sudden you start coming up with all these ideas and you almost feel like, wow, I can't believe I'm coming up with this stuff. How about I build this? I should build this. And I think that's the comfort level of you getting at ease into the space that you're in, that the risk level that you took to start building company A or company one or company two, is that as you start to build, your openness to the world starts to just expand dramatically. So it starts to allow you to start to see other problems. And then you start to combat all these things that you want to fix. And then you forgot that you're running one business and you're like, wait a second, I got to pull the brakes on here and go back to what I was building. But that's what creativity comes from. And it comes from being in this open world of being able to solve one problem that you started with and then being able to understand how you're able to solve it and how that can open up leagues and leagues of more opportunities. Mm-hmm. And as you continue to grow as an entrepreneur, you'll get brought in more ideas, more concepts, more problems. And then you kind of want to fit into it more and you want to solve more problems. And that's where you start getting into that investing side. So it's pretty exciting.
That's awesome. So let's go back to the early days. How did you get started into this? I think you shared a little bit of your story with me, but I'd like to share that with the audience as well. Being a VC is a glamorous role, I must say. From the outside, it all looks very glamorous, but I've been on the other side as well, and I know the kind of things that you have to go through. So why don't you give us a little bit of your backstory and how did you get into this business?
For sure. Well, it's an interesting story because it all started back when I worked at Loblaws. So I was a software engineer way back, I guess, 15, 20 years ago. And I worked at Loblaws. I was working in their online e-commerce area, but I was in development. So I was building out backends and helping build out the structure and infrastructure that was going to be operating these online platforms. And through that, I actually wrote the business plan. Being in IT, I wrote the business plan for the business people and then pitched it to them and said, hey, look, even though I'm building this, I kind of think that you should do it this way. And they're like, what, you're an IT guy. What do you know about this stuff? And eventually they came asked and said, hey, maybe you should come work in this division. So I got promoted into the online marketing division, not only because of the background and all the things I've been doing, but I guess because I position this as, I see this as a big opportunity, and I pitched them to be able to own and operate it and run it. So that's kind of where I got my start. And then from that, spending all of my time, and you know, I could tell you that I walked through 10 feet of snow and across oceans to get to where I had to be, but I did work long hours and days. And the front end admin people and others in the business didn't really know what I did, but they saw that I was this online guy. So they would send me startups. And what ended up coming from that is that I was so fascinated by these startups that would call me that I would sit down, meet with all of them, figure out what they were trying to build, help them re-engineer their business models and their plans. And then I would pitch them through to senior level execs at Loblaws. And I did that for years. So I would probably say that 50% of my role was actually just meeting with startups, even though this had nothing to do with my role. Mm-hmm. I took that on. So I would work 18-hour days and I loved it. And I would literally work with startups all over, pitch them through. And as I continued to do that and I got to my end of my tenure and I left and went to a startup, I continued to work with startups. I couldn't invest at the time. I was not further along in my career to be able to have that opportunity. But then once I started to work in that startup space, I saw a bigger opportunity yet again. Even though the industry 10, 15 years ago wasn't really conducive to startups, they really did beat them up and throw them out, is that I found that myself being drawn back into that space. So I started to make investments. And then 6 years ago, those investments came back and said, hey, we really could use your help raising funds and getting in front of more investors. And at first I didn't think too much of it. And then I kept getting that same, hey, why don't you come help? And because there was a bit of a gap between my helping and investing, when the company started asking me, hey, you invest in this, can you help us out? I started to look at that and say, you know what, maybe there's an opportunity here because I find that this whole area is so disorganized. Maybe we can come in and try and help businesses and set up an entity that would do this. And that's where we created OPN. And it was kind of around the time I got introduced or invited to do a podcast. This was 7 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And it kind of kicked everything off. So at the end of the podcast, I called the gentleman up and I asked him, I said, hey, what you just pitched to me or what we just sat through, can I use this format? I'm going to go do something else. And he was like, of course, man, it's a free world. You can do what you want. I'm like, okay, just want to make sure. So I went in and I took that and I started doing podcasting. And that was, like I said, about 7 years ago. And I just had such a tremendous, amazing time from it. And it was all around big businesses and startups. So that kind of got us into that foray of how do we want to look at startups? How can we help them? So we started introducing startups into big business all through podcasting. And while we were doing that, that's where OPN started. We decided, you know what, why don't we make this bigger, better, faster? Let's create an open community and see if we can get more people working with us to work with startups. So we started out on that journey. And it started by running events, pitch events.
Yeah.
Today we've run 109 pitch events, and they vary from anywhere from 40 to 400 people. We've done them predominantly for the first 5 years they were done face to face, and today they're now done online. And what's come out of this journey is that our whole goal is that we wanted to help startups. So that was our focus. It wasn't around the investor, it wasn't around big business. It was about how do we help startups get in front of investors. So we spent running these events and helping the startups and then investing. And I personally would make investments. And I was always saying, like, how did I know how to do this? This seems so easy. And it just dawned on me after a bunch of events that I had been doing this with startups for a long time, way back in my Loblaws days. So I was like kind of trying to figure out how, and I guess Loblaws grew me without them doing it, grew me into working with startups. I was a fan the whole time. So the better part of the last 20, 25 years grew me into being a startup investor or working with them at least. And then once I started making those investments, when we created OPN, today we see about 300 companies a month, and we net those down to the best 10 every 2 months. We run them through a program. That program is called Skip the Line. Our LPs then rank the companies that go through. We help them and as they go through. And then 5 to 8 of those pitch at our final event. And then we invest in 1 to 4 of those companies that go through the event. And the learning has been tremendous. But one of the things that we always made sure we focused on was that it wasn't about the big business or the investor. It was about the startup. How do we glorify and help the startup move that next needle? And in doing that, it drew the attention of investors, which then drew the attention of big business. And today, we now focus on the same thing, helping the startup move through the ecosystem. But now we've got the attention of a lot of investors who not only come into our fund, but have come into our network. And from that, we're now able to connect the two quite respectively and allowing for investors to find what they're looking for while we keep grooming and putting first money in and all this great stuff that we do around our fund and around the business. But it's always about ensuring the startup wins.
That's awesome. Yeah. One thing that strikes me in that story is like sometimes life takes you to a place where you're not realizing in the moment, and then you realize it later. And then the other thing that really resonated was, if you really love what you're doing, it almost seems too easy. Sometimes unfair that you can do all these things with so much ease. But I feel like once people really find what they truly love, it becomes easy automatically.
Completely agree with that. Oh, yeah. It's huge. It's fascinating that if you take a second and look back, and when I do my podcast with Ask an Angel, or we interview angels and VCs around the world, one thing that I learned from that is that, you know, once you start to dive into the personality, and you and I have chatted through this, but once you dive into the personality of someone and what they were doing in the past, and you can see how that trickle effect turns into who they are today, I think that's very powerful. And I think a lot of times people may have overlooked where they've come from and how they got to where they are today. And if I look back at my journey, that when I started off in my first company, which was a software resourcing company, what's fascinating about that is that today, or speaking when I started, I created a mind map. And on this mind map, I said, this is what I want to be in 15 years or 20 years, whatever it was. And I drew this all out. And this happened actually twice. It happened before I left Loblaws. And then it happened again after, in 2007 when I started, but just after I started. And I created these two mind maps. I don't remember doing this. I found this document a year ago or 2 years ago. And what I had done was I went through and I pitched two guys at Loblaws and said, hey, I want to build this. This is what I want to build. Do you guys want to join and be part of this with me? And the two guys at the time were like, well, you know, we don't want to leave the big company. We've been here a long time. So they're two IT guys, still good colleagues today. But they love the concept, but they didn't want to make the switch. And then when I did make the switch, I had gone and created another mind map of where I wanted myself and the business to go. And I left it at that. And then 2 years ago, I was cleaning out a drawer and I had a folder called Ideas, and I opened it up, and inside there was these two documents. And what was fascinating is that when I had talked to the guys, they actually told me, they said, you know, you pitched us on what you built. And I was like, no, I didn't. This is all fresh. They're like, no, you actually knew this. So I was like, okay, that's weird. And then when I look at this document just after I started Hardboot, it's fascinating, but in the one right corner, I put venture capitalist. And I couldn't tell you for the life of me if I even knew what venture capitalist was back in 2007, but apparently I did. And I had dreamt that I wanted to be in this space. And look at, you know, 12, 13 years later, we're sitting here and we're building that. So I guess you can manifest a lot of things, but what's fascinating is that your background really does dictate where you're going to go in the future. And you just need to figure out how to embrace it.
Absolutely. No, that's amazing and very inspiring as well. The other thing is, what I found fascinating in your story is that you are not scared of speaking your mind, taking those ideas to the people. And that's what I feel like a lot of people hesitate to do that. They think, oh, who am I to, think like that? Who am I to talk to this person like that? And I think people don't realize that, first of all, everybody thinks like, everybody has an imposter syndrome. Even the most senior executives, they have this imposter syndrome. And the other thing they don't realize is if they don't share it with anybody, nobody's going to actually understand what they're trying to say. Because this is another thing which I find people do is like, oh, they should understand. They should know that I am capable. They should, you know, pick me. And then I ask them, did you ever talk to them about it? Did you ever express that this is what you want to do? And then years later, they when the time has gone, they're like, oh, I could have done that. I could have been this guy. But that's what's fascinating. I think, how do you, first of all, do you find that in entrepreneurs? And how do you help them overcome all this fear of rejection and sort of talking to people and sharing these ideas?
Well, it's, again, another fascinating question, because I do ponder this quite a bit, because throughout my journey, when you talk about the imposter syndrome, I think we all do live through it, and I do myself. And I think, you know, why am I here? Do I even belong here? Yeah. How did I get here? And, you know, when I was going through some of the discussion points, it was fascinating to me, because one of the things that I try to work with startups, and that is that if you believe in them and you help them believe in themselves, it really comes down to is that a lot of the time you don't know if you're doing a great idea. You don't know if you're building the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through this many of times. And what occurred at the beginning is that I didn't have the confidence in myself. I didn't have the confidence in what I was trying to achieve. And then when I would ask people, they would always tell me that the wrong things. They would tell me, oh, you shouldn't do this. Oh, you can't compete that way. And I would take that to heart, because I believe that those people were meaning well and that they mm-hmm. were good at what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that a lot of people self-protect, and they don't really believe in the success of other people, because it's offensive to them, because maybe they're not coming up with the ideas or they're not doing that. So it took me some time to actually build up my own self-confidence and value. But what I learned in big business when I was working there is that I had no fear of seniority or people above me. I always looked at them as they've got something that I don't, and I've got something they don't. So there's a good crossroads in there. Mm-hmm. So I had no problem walking into the president's office or CEO's office of a company and having a spitball conference or talk about stuff, because I knew that I brought a lot of value, and I knew that I would learn a lot from them and vice versa. So I was able to overcome that part really quickly. But when it came to being an entrepreneur, that shifted. Now I had to believe in myself, and what I was building was going to be something somebody wanted. And I found that that was very tough to get over it. So it took me a long time. But there was one piece of advice that I got that was always stuck with me when I very, very first started. And it's funny how it reared up all the way. But it was, a gentleman told me, you won't know your business until you've been in business for 5 years. Mm. And I thought about that comment all the time. I thought, okay, I'm not there yet. I'm not. And I wouldn't tell people when I first started, I wouldn't tell people I was the CEO of my own company, because I was fearful that if I failed, that I would look bad. And I didn't want to fail on my record. So I was like, okay, I can't tell anybody that. So I would say, oh, I'm a product manager, or I'm this. And I just wouldn't be able to open up that door because of my fear of not having enough confidence in myself and my ability. So it took a long time to overcome that. So you take those learnings and you go back to entrepreneurs, and you have to not force them, but you kind of have to like really get behind them. And I think that's where that support feature comes in, is that when you're supporting them and you're supporting their ideas, that first check that they receive, you know, their confidence level jumps. And then that second check and third check. And then as they start to generate revenues and get market fit, their confidence will build. And that's really what drives these entrepreneurs to move forward, is validation. But they have to validate themselves first. So I take myself and I say, okay, that was the wrong way to do this. How do I now get people to think and believe in themselves and believe that the mission that they're on, the journey that they're on, is going to change the world, or it's going to change in their business, and to take that confidence and keep nudging it up another level. That comes from the engagements you're having, the conversations you're having, but it is believing in yourself. And we can all say that that's easy to do. It is the hardest thing to do. When we're working with a startup, we'll say, hey guys, tell everybody that you're pitching at this event. We'll get 1 out of 10 companies that will go right away and do it. Then you'll get 3 or 4 on the day of that will say it, and the other 5 or 6 won't do it. And you think, well, why wouldn't you want to promote yourself? It's just the ability of saying, wait, I did this, and then letting everybody know, and hopefully they jump in. And if they don't, you feel that, oh man, people are going to beat me up because I wasn't successful. And I think you have to kind of change that mindset around and say, the more I'm out there, the more that people know what I'm doing, the more people will actually get behind me so that when we are having that conversation, they're going to tell me, and this is a confidence thing, they're going to say, hey, JP, you did a really good job here. I saw you post this and this. And you're like, oh, yeah, I did. Oh, cool. You saw that. Yeah. And that actually helps you move that next notch forward. So I think a lot of it is trying to help build confidence in these guys and women that are trying to build companies so that they can start to see that, you know what, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Oh, there is some investor likes me. Oh, there is a product market fit. And those things come in time, but you really have to support the startup and that founder and help them build confidence in their and themselves.
You are listening to Bootstrapping Your Dreams show with Manoj Agarwal. Businesses face numerous challenges like finding the right product market fit, determining the market size, implementing a winning go-to-market strategy, crafting customer-centric USP, competitive analysis, looking for funding, building up cash flow and profitability. We have made a lot of free resources available to the entrepreneurial community, including this podcast. We invite you to check out our websites and follow us on social channels. The links are in the show notes. We hope you find the resources useful and utilize them to grow your business. We also have some programs for entrepreneurs. If you find our content useful, then you will definitely find the programs outstanding. So do check them out. That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, very, very well said and a very important piece of advice. So thank you so much for sharing that. Now, you've, you know, you go through hundreds of startups and listen to hundreds and hundreds of pitches, and you've seen probably more failures than most, and you also have seen successes in the startup world. What are some of the qualities that you find are common in successful entrepreneurs? And what are the? I mean, it may be not a good way to list the negative qualities, but what are some of the challenges that you think that people face when they fail to find that success?
Well, I think it all starts with, again, it goes back to that believing in yourself part of it. Yeah. I think the success comes from the people that learn to listen. And my line is, you know, listen twice, speak once. Yeah. And it really resonates the fact that if you're going to be listening, you're going to be understanding what a customer is looking for. You're going to be understanding how to service that person or those people or that industry or that business. But a lot of it comes from, as an entrepreneur, it comes from listening. But then the next biggest piece of that is action. I think a lot of people lack the ability. I don't want to put a percent to it. I do, but I won't put a percent to this. But it is the people that get S blank it done. So when you're the people that are accountable to get something done, your success rate will jump. A lot of the time, we talk a great game, but our actions don't match up to what the outcome should be. So if you're listening and you're taking in great input, and now you got to get out to the field and start playing the game, and you know, let's just say you're playing basketball, then you better be playing the game and accomplishing the things that you need to keep moving the dial. And that action speaks volumes. Because people want to get behind a fast-moving business or a fast-moving race or a great game. They don't want to get into the game that no one's doing anything in and the game is slow and lazy. So people like action and you have to be able to move quickly. So founders that get shit done is the ones that are going to be successful. The ones that listen are the ones that are going to take input so that they can improve and always iterate. And then that comes down to focus. So we talked earlier where you can have all of this stuff that you want to do as an entrepreneur because you start to open your mind up to opportunities and possibilities, but the ones that are successful, the ones that focus on the outcome. So you're listening, you're doing, and you're focused. And those are the types of three things that I look for in a founder. And I always used to say that I'm looking for crazy founders. And people said, you can't use that word. Psychotic isn't good. So for me, what we've come down to the term is we're looking for founders that have that fifth gear. If everybody in the world is in fourth gear, Michael Jordan had a fifth gear. We want people that have that extra gear. And why is that? Because they're going to do whatever it takes. And when you're in a focus mode, you're going to solve problems quicker. you're so tied into that industry, you're going to see it coming and you're going to adapt faster and quicker so that you don't get hit by massive fines or get knocked out of the place because you didn't do the right things. You're going to see it all happening before it does. Your gut's going to tell you how to move and you're going to move quick. So there's a lot of those little pieces, but you know, obviously team is great. All those things make a huge difference, but it all comes down to that founder and how much they can throw that stuff into fifth gear. And finding that fifth gear founder is huge because they're the ones that are going to be game changers.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. And so now let's talk about your journey. I mean, we talked about the successes, the qualities that you had. What about some mistakes that that you learned from? And again, you know, I know for a fact, being an entrepreneur myself, we don't know those mistakes as we are making them because we are all perfect all the time. But what are some of the mistakes that you can sort of look back and say, I learned a lesson from that?
Yeah, you know, when it comes down to the making mistakes, we make them all the time. And I don't, as you mentioned, I don't think we always realize the types of mistakes that we're making or if it has any impact. But I find that when you can be true to yourself and really dive into what you're doing, we're making mistakes every day. We're making judgment calls that we thought were the right way or going left versus right. I think at the end of the day, if you can, as a business owner, you can always be planning and trying to figure out where the future is and where you want to be in that business. But there's one lesson that I've learned. Unfortunately, I would say I've learned over and over again. Yeah. But I've defined it down to ensuring I don't do this ever again. And that is that nothing in this world needs to be solved in nanoseconds. Anybody that pressures you into closing a deal or getting something done is not worth your time. So stop, breathe, take some time, give it 24 hours. I know there's this whole thing when you're going to rebuttal against someone, give yourself 24 hours. It's the same thing on a deal. If the deal is too good to be true, it's because it is too good to be true. It's not good, walk away. And I think we all are looking for this great deal or this great tie-in, and we react too quickly and we don't think. Everybody in business is always looking for a better deal. So people are always looking at ways to get more out of you for nothing. And I think a lot of founders tend to learn the hard way because they trust too much, they believe too much in people. And don't get me wrong, you should always trust and believe, but also what steps above that is trust and believe in yourself. So in saying that, if someone's pushing you to do something quickly, put the brakes on, see if they stick around. And you'll probably find that they'll walk away because the bully tactics, they don't work, but they do get people a lot of times to walk through. And I learned this earlier on in my career. I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in contracts and pieces of work that we were doing. Because we didn't take pay right away, we were too lenient. We would do the work, hand it off, and then they would run away and not pay. So we had to build up policies. But at the time, if I would have had these learnings or somewhere that I could have gained this knowledge, I never would have obviously done those things. And so you learn the hard way, and learn the hard way is not a way to build a company.
Absolutely.
But being able to ensure that you take a breath and think about everything you're going to do, I think that's, you've earned that as an entrepreneur. So never let anybody push you or force you into something quick. Nothing needs to be solved that fast.
Amazing. That's great advice. Now let's talk about another misconception, if I will, that founders have. Like they want to have an absolutely original idea. They don't want any competition. This is something that I've heard all the time. I want greenfield project. I want blue ocean. I mean, they use many, many terms. And what are your views about it? Like, do you think that competition is bad or not? Or what should the founders be looking at when they come up with an idea?
Well, the first thing, and then I would kind of go back to the discussions that we were talking about, is action speaks louder than words. So if, first of all, don't let anybody tell you that you can't build something. That's the first thing. Go at it. You're going to build something, build it. Don't let someone tell you that it's not good or this doesn't fit. Figure it out. The best way to make a decision is to be in the space at the time, diving in, learning everything to make a call than it is to be on the outside, second guessing yourself and not getting in. And I find that a lot of people are too fearful of the risk. Risk it. You risk walking to school. You risk walking, I don't know, running, riding a bike, driving a car, jumping off of out of a parachute, out of a plane. All of these things are risk, yet you can't risk your future by doing something. So risk it, go after it. If your dream and heart will not tell you to stop doing it, then go after it. That's the first thing. And then I think the second aspect to the question is that when you are figuring out how and what you want to build or where you want to go, surround yourself with, I would say, like-minded people, but find an expert in the area. So if I'm looking at database and data and real deep stuff, I'm going to reach out and ask you and say, hey, I need some help. What do you think? But find people that are at least positive, critical positive, where they're going to support you, but they're also going to beat you up because they're helping you move forward. People that just talk you out of it and tell you it's wrong, that's not solving the problem, and they don't understand the space. They don't understand what you're doing. You got to get someone that gets behind you. So any startup should always find one person that is way above them in pay grade, in knowledge, and bring them into the business. Get them to help validate you. So that brings some security to what you're trying to build. And then once you've got that on board, you're going to be more energetic anyways, because you've got somebody that can listen, and that goes into coaching and mentoring. But just to get that off the ground, you got to really push hard, and you got to figure out who can support this. And you know, your parents and everybody will always tell you to go to the comfort level because they want you to be happy. They don't want you to be losing all your money. So everything you have to take in with a grain of salt. So all information you bring in, you have to be the smart entrepreneur that takes it all in. And then basically you're going to start triaging the good, the bad, and the ugly, put it together, get your map, and then go after it and get those people to support you that are, get the people, the right people to support you in that journey.
So don't be afraid of the competition. Just believe in yourself and get the right help.
It's an interesting play, but when we invested in myself personally and then the fund into Flow Water, everybody said, ah, man, another water company. We don't need another water company. But one thing that they did that really stuck out different between them is that they were innovative. So they were using Tetra Pak. And then the second thing they did was even more innovative, is that there was no brand owner in the space. So you had all of these different brands of water all challenging each other, but it was so discombobulated that there wasn't one real winner. There wasn't somebody that branded health and wellness or really took the market. So if someone comes to us and says, hey, you know what, I'm interested to get in this space, it's really competitive, and everybody's like, oh, it's too competitive, I'm not in. Now I look at it and say, okay, I'm going to look at this a little bit differently. Can you own the space? Can you be the brand that everybody's going to leverage? Like if you take Pepto-Bismol, it's called that because there's one company that builds Pepto-Bismol and everybody eats it or drinks it. It's the same thing as, how can you own that category? And if you can own the category, then get in there. It doesn't matter how competitive it is. What matters is that there's nobody owning the space. So be the voice, get in there, be aggressive. So that's where you're starting to see a lot of change nowadays, where businesses are going into a category and they're saying, look, there's 30 competitors. The space is $1 billion, but there isn't one that owns it. There's like four or five leaders, and no brand that anybody is able to say, you know what, I know these guys. There's no brand recognition. Good. Build a brand, grow the hell out of it, and win the race.
Awesome. Awesome. And this answer leads me directly into the next question, which is the value of mentors and coaches. I mean, anything that we do, whether that's sports, whether that's speaking or anything like that, you really need somebody who can guide you. But I found that entrepreneurship is a totally different animal altogether. And without mentors, I don't even know people can actually succeed. What are your views on the value of mentors in terms of entrepreneurship?
Personally, I think that mentors and coaches are amazing. I think that they are the real big starting point to you growing your company. I think that every startup founder should find someone that they can work with, someone that they can trust and believe in, and that they can have conversations about the hardest hitting things that they're going to face, someone that they can open up to and say that they're losing money, or that they are looking to expand, or they need help on this side of things. I think it's crucial to any business founder, especially if you're a first time founder, you need as much face time as you can get from people with experience. I tend to think that a lot of founders think they know everything, and you know, they have that saying where it's lonely at the top. It's lonely because we put ourselves into a box and we forget that there's a lot of valuable information that we can gain from people with experience and knowledge. And finding that one coach or mentor that can help guide you through that I think is one, the first thing any startup should do, as we just chatted to. But I also think that if you can align this up properly, is that you'll have maybe call it a mental health coach for yourself personally to start. And that's someone you can lean on at all times and talk about everything and feel comfortable. But I think the next stage for that is people with industry experience, is that you'll go and have that discussion with them. And what you'll find is that once you start to bring that coach in or mentor in with you, is that they'll be there for a couple of years and you'll gain a lot of knowledge and value from them. And so will they. But there's a point in time where you'll progress into the next mentor coach, somebody that's taken companies from, you know, a seed stage to Series A. And then you might find that your next mentor coach is someone that's taken Series B to the markets and the public markets. And I think that that's where we have to be open and being able to understand ourselves and our needs, and that those have to be met by the speed and scaling that you're in, and the people that are surrounding you will change throughout that scaling process. So the first mentor you brought on the day one that you started your company is going to be different than the day you go to the public markets. Mm-hmm. So we need to be more open-minded to that, and obviously be cognizant that everybody's time is valuable, but try to get the most out of that engagement you have with that mentor or coach.
That's great. And how do you go about finding, and this is, you know, the reason why I'm asking is because a lot of founders ask that question. Okay, how do I find these mentors? How do I find these coaches? So what is one piece of advice you'll give them?
Well, sometimes when you build great things, people will find you. So that is one way of approaching it. The other side is, again, finding people that have either real complementary skills in the same environment that you're going after, the vertical that you're in. If you're in banking, find somebody that has a very similar banking experience or background, especially if they've got 30 years of tenure. It's going to be huge for you. It also helps de-risk it. But I think that a lot of the times when you're looking for, and I'll give an example, when I worked at Loblaws, my first mentor was a software engineer, and I met him on day one, and we became buddies ever since. And he became a mentor and guide and coach. Unfortunately, Ben passed away a few years, but he was a brilliant man. And he actually is the one that connected us to build my resourcing team in Philippines. So he was part of that whole process. That's where he was from. But in that time period that we were together, we gained a lot of knowledge. And then what I started to look at was, wait, I'm not as good in marketing. I need to build up that marketing skill. I'm just a software engineer. I need to do something different. So then I went and asked the senior vice president of Loblaws in marketing if he would be my coach and mentor. And he looked at me like, huh, really? You're a software guy doing this? And what do I have to do with this? And I said, look, I'm going to be building a lot of great things. I'm going to be doing this, blah, blah, blah. Sure, I was full of energy. And he was like, all right, I could do this. So he did. So he met with me once a month. And I sat down with the senior vice president of marketing at Loblaws, which had nothing to do at the time where I was. But oddly enough, when I got to that position of running all of the e-commerce platforms, I ended up indirectly working for him. So it all kind of moved into that direction, even though I had no idea, but it was a skill that I didn't have. So I wanted to fill the gap. And, you know, so for now, my mentor would be Alfred Apps from Miller Thompson. And he also is one of our investors in the fund, but he's also the team and business that builds out our fund. So why is that valuable is that I have day-to-day interactions with him on how we run the fund, how we operate, and he's been coaching and working with me for 5 years now. And I can tell you that it's phenomenal, the gain of knowledge and learning that I've gained in that time period. It's almost an obligation for myself to not let him down and the business, because of the time and effort they put into us, to make sure that this is successful. So you have to line yourself up to make sure that you've got checks and balances, and these coaches and mentors help you do that too.
Awesome. No, that's great. Very, very good advice. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for coming here onto our show, sharing your wisdom. It has been impactful. And I think anybody who's looking to get into startup, they are growing their startup, looking for funding, this advice is going to really help them. So thank you so much for sharing that. Now, before I let you go, can you tell us how people can connect with you if they want to have a chat with you?
For sure. Well, the fastest, easiest way to connect is through LinkedIn. We do lots of discussions there. So you can find me, which is Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-E-R-Y, Potvin, P-O-T-V-I-N, on LinkedIn. Or you can send us an email at j.p@opn.ninja.
Awesome. We'll put those links in the show notes and make it easy for people.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for having me today. This has been awesome. And I'm glad that we were able to share a little bit of how and what we do and where we got to today. But brilliant job. And again, thank you very much for having me and wishing you guys nothing but the best. But again, Manuj, it was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Awesome.
Hey, I'm Sarah, producer of the Bootstrapping Your Dreams show. This episode has come to an end. Don't forget to check out the episode show notes for the links to the resources mentioned in this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Until the next episode, goodbye. Keep going and keep winning.